to talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I was asking David about Earth for a good reason. Well, aside from the fact that it's home, if these energy anomalies are exhibited at 19.5 on every planet, maybe every sun, every body that's out there rotating. And by the way, at 19.5, I'm told you'll also find Mexico City, Veracruz, Mexico. You'll find Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. You'll find a lot at 19.5 besides just Hawaii. But geologic history teaches us a very great deal if we want to listen. And that's the key phrase, if we want to listen. It's got those old woolly mammoths, you know, that were flash frozen. Now in South America, the same deal with plants, flash frozen. Now, the scenario on the day after tomorrow, scientists complain, is not possible because there's simply not enough energy to generate that kind of superstorm. Well, geologic history teaches us, if you want to listen, that there was at one time enough energy, which means there can be again. Now, if you connect that to what David and Richard have been saying about all the things that float out there in space, like suns and planets and all the rest of it, have this energy, this dimension or another, if they all have it, then maybe that's where you get enough energy for what we've got geologic evidence of happening in the past, and maybe that's where you get the energy for it to happen again. Once again, Richard C. Hoagland and David Wilcox. So the big question is, where is the energy coming from? Is there enough energy to produce these kinds of rapid, dramatic, profound earth changes, as in our climate flipping suddenly? Well, there's a lot of evidence to indicate that, yes, there was a story last week that all of the what was the Dust Bowl in the United States, a very tragic event. It was really horrible. You should do some reading about the Dust Bowl. God, it's incredible. Was produced by just a couple of degrees of ocean change temperature. So I don't know. Would there be energy, gentlemen, for a kind of global superstorm, the kind of thing that would have perhaps frozen plants in woolly mammoths' mouths, flash froze stuff down in South America they're finding now, and even corpses and all kinds of things. But the geologists all kind of can't figure it out, so they put it up on a shelf somewhere and say, we're not going to deal with this.
Do you want the long answer or the short answer?
I'll always vote for the when it comes to you, Richard. Just don't even...
And then you wonder why people ask if we have a feud going on.
Short answer, Richard.
All right. Do you remember the film Forbidden Planet?
Oh, so well.
That incredible film, which I hope they don't remake. That would be such a tragedy. Certain things should be left exactly the way they are. Remember the scene in the Krell lab with Walter Pidgeon?
Yes.
Who's the actor that went into different things, but he played the Starship Commander?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, there's a scene where the doctor, you know, the guy's name was Morbius, the Walter Pidgeon guy.
Yeah.
And he's been there for 20 years trying to figure out this incredible super science left by this race that mysteriously vanished before the expedition got there.
All right.
And they've now figured out that the reason they vanished is because they created this incredible technology that could materialize out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just consciousness.
Thought.
Physical objects and energy and could cut through even, incredible numbers of feet of so-called Krell supermetal.
Yep.
And there is this picture, this stunning scene that had been done by this set designer, who was a genius, whose name I forget, of all these electrical meters. And you know what the old-fashioned ammeters
times
used to 10, look like?
Times 10, times 10,
yeah,
times
exactly.
10.
Yeah, exactly. And
to infinity, virtually. In other words,
as the power of infinity. That is the amount of energy, Art, in hyperdimensional space, in hyperspace, available to do all of the awful things you just described. There is no limit to it.
All right. But and I guess here's where David comes back in. Are you saying, David, that we're now seeing on all planetary bodies that we're able to observe sufficiently an increase energy level output? I think I've got that right. You're certainly saying yes. The answer is yes. Where do you think this is headed?
Well, I want to give fair airtime to my hypothesis as well as Richard's, because I think both of us are on the right track.
All right, but you differ, apparently. Let's hear how.
Well, most of the Russians who have been looking at this stuff have simply concluded that there are separated zones of energy in the galaxy, mm-hmm. and this is an energy that Western science is not aware of. Richard would call it hyperdimensional energy. I might call it torsion fields, quantum medium, whatever. It's the same basic stuff. The idea being that one really major competing hypothesis here is that we're moving into an area of the galaxy where this energy is higher. There's one guy by the name of Dr. Sergei Smelyakov, and what he's done is to show that 2012 represents sort of like an implosion period. And if you can just imagine briefly that you have a bottle of salad dressing and the oil and the water have separated and there's a nice straight line between the two. Mm-hmm. When we look at hyperdimensional energy, there's a variety of things going all the way back to Tesla and earlier showing that in many cases this energy behaves similar to a fluid. One of the things that happens when you vibrate a fluid is that geometry appears inside the fluid. It's a natural waveform. Happens to be three-dimensional. Scientists don't like that because it's a lot harder to model a three-dimensional wave than a two-dimensional wave. But this gets back to some of the Maxwell stuff where there were 200 quaternions, as he called them, which are basically mathematical things that let you make coordinates in four dimensions rather than three. It's probably the easiest way to say it. And so he mapped out that even in electromagnetic energy, there's these hidden, what Richard calls scalar potentials, that are sort of pushing on that electromagnetic wave. The tetrahedron's hiding in there. So then what we're talking about basically is that the very energy that underlies matter and consciousness and the behavior of light, the speed of light, all this stuff, can vary from one place to another. It appears that there are zones in which this energy can vary within a single galaxy. And it also appears that 2012 represents a water line between one density and another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more technical than I'd really want to try to go into. But basically, if you throw a little stone into a pond, you get ripples. And you can see these ripples. Well, there's ripples coming off of this water line, and they're all partitioned based on what many people already know about, the golden mean ratio. And every time we punch through one of these walls, we get huge earthquakes, we get the fall of major civilizations, we get the arising of new spiritual teachings, and we get the arising of new forms of measuring time.
And this is a cycle that repeats.
It implodes into 2012, meaning that the closer we get to 2012, the more frequently we're going to hit these walls.
So it'll come in waves.
Right.
See, the difference between David's model and mine is probably the razor blade on which this whole idea is balanced.
I guess it's very important, isn't it, Richard? You're saying that the energy is within the planets.
No. What I'm saying is the trigger mechanism to access it,
yes,
is different than David's model. David is using some Russian work which basically says we move from one region of the galaxy to
another. And we're going to run into this energy.
All right. I'm saying that even if we didn't have a galaxy, if the Earth and the Sun existed all by its lonesome,
yes,
these changes would still be going on.
As a result of?
Of modulation by the movements of the planets around the Sun, particularly some big eyes way out there in the dark that have not yet been rediscovered by modern 21st century science. They act like potentiometers, ratcheting up and ratcheting down this energy, you know, gated in from higher dimensional space.
Would one of those be the infamous Planet X?
Yes, but it's not on a collision course. It's on a circular orbit, more or less. It's permanently out there. There may be another one. If you do the numbers, it looks like we probably need two. They're in very, very long orbits. This new little tiny asteroid they discovered, Sedna, the other day?
Yes.
And announced? Don't you find it rather curious that, and again, we know we have a space agency that's dealing in rituals and symbolism and you know, hidden messages, but don't you find it interesting that this thing has an orbital period of 11,500 years, which happens to be the Bovall age when Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall think that the civilization, you know, last peaked on Earth and built the pyramids and had high technology and then was wiped out by some massive terrestrial cataclysm.
Quite intriguing.
And wait for the good stuff. Do you know where the name Sedna comes from? It's the Inuit goddess of victims. The press said it was goddess of the sea, but when you actually read the legends, she's the goddess of victims.
Huh.
It's kind of like the in crowd are projecting that because of these planetary movements in this time frame on a cyclic recurring pattern, there will be more victims, Art.
Mm.
So we have a separation. We have the in-crowd that may know a little more than they're letting on in these papers. We then have the science community publishing all these observations. And then we have David and myself putting the data together and saying, wait a minute, it's a different picture than the mainstream is conveying to you, and much more serious, and we got to pay very close attention.
This is sort of a side question, but Isaac in Portland, Maine asks this. He says, fascinating interview, and I can't help but think that all this increased energy and global change throughout the solar system is having a social impact on humans. Now,
he is right on.
Absolutely.
He is right on. David, you want to take this, and then I'll give it a whack?
Yeah.
Sure, I'd love to do that one. One of the ways that we can most benefit from this knowledge that we're sharing tonight is in understanding how we can actually harness the energy for ourselves, how we can use it, because it just so happens that there is a way in which we could help to solve the problems of the biosphere, the problems that are going to be shown in this $125 million blockbuster the day after tomorrow. We're not helpless. And if there's one thing that Richard and I can do, it's to put aside any weird little differences we have in a hypothesis and get down to the truth. So when we're talking about biology, we're talking about something that links together whatever your different hypotheses are to some sort of common ground. Now, it appears that when the Martians put together the Cydonia Plateau, they told us about the physics. But they also might have been telling us about the physics because they knew that on a predictable cyclical pattern that the kind of changes that we're seeing right now would be happening. They may have also given us the solution in that the actual message is encoded in giant pyramids.
Well, if they had the solution, then why are they gone?
I think they basically started doing it too late. I think they discovered the technology too late. They started to build the pyramids because they knew what they would do, but they hadn't started it soon enough, and they ran out of time.
I have a little different take on it, Art.
All right.
I think that, and again, we're leaping now to the end of the story, and you know I hate doing that. I like to document so people can
right,
get where we're going.
Just play along.
Okay. Well, I can do that. I think that the Mars experience is a cautionary tale for what human beings have done over and over and over again, which is to basically kill themselves off. I think we're looking at the end product of a cataclysmic war, which wound up with literal destruction of some members of the ancient solar system. And when that happened, this physics, which used to work like a well-oiled machine, like a perfectly tuned Accutron watch, became broken. Now, here's where you have to understand a little bit of how the physics works. It isn't the static geometry. In other words, we're not looking at tetrahedrons and planets with, you know, vertices poking out through the crust. We're looking at resonance patterns in the ether mediating the energy between dimensions. So it's kind of like sound waves or any other kind of waveform. You get what are called standing wave patterns. And those patterns can look solid, but in fact, they're all energy. They're just basically patterns of energy in empty space.
Well, that sounds an awful lot like David was describing the Russian theory that we're going to be bumping into.
I'm talking about the space of the solar system. Again,
yes.
Forget the galaxy and just think about the solar system, the 9 plus maybe 2 more planets orbiting around a sun with little satellites orbiting around them. As they wheel around each other, these energy patterns caused by the spinning of each of the massive planets cause David's ripples in the pond. That's an excellent analogy, all right? But imagine if you had moving ripples on a stationary pond where you have overlapping rings, you would have interference patterns. You'd have constructive and destructive interference. If everything was perfectly positioned and timed and spinning at the right synchronized rate, it would all be like one extraordinary orchestra of music, something like the most amazing cantata or symphony ever written, where there was not one discordant note. But what happens if you eliminate a major section of the orchestra, blow it up, all right? You wind up with discordance. You wind up with waves that interfere as opposed to constructively reinforce. And the solar system, in my model, that we're living in, is a broken solar system following the catastrophe, the war, that resulted in the disappearance of the guys on Mars, who eventually were a tiny fragment of us that appeared here. If that's true, if we're living in the decayed ruins of the former glory of a system that worked perfectly, that was perfectly in tune, then the physics is broken. And these periodic catastrophes, Art, these upwellings and massive energy increases and all the other things that we're seeing,
yes,
are not part of the normal functioning of the system. They're because it's broken. And we must use our knowledge of this physics while we have time to figure out how to fix it on the one place where we are still living, which is namely planet Earth.
We actually have a way to do that that does not violate national security, does not reveal any unforeseen technological advances, but which could actually reduce or eliminate a lot of the problems that we're having.
How would you fix it?
You remember the work of Dr. John DeSalvo.
Vaguely.
Talking about the Giza pyramids, and that there were scientists in Russia who have built these 144-foot-tall pyramids out of fiberglass and PVC plastic. And basically, some of the things that have happened include things that would really be able to help the environment in such a dramatic way that it seems pretty clear that any planet, when it gets to a certain level of sophistication, is naturally going to take use of this.
What are you suggesting could be done with a pyramid? What in the experiments that the Russians did would suggest that the pyramids have the power to do anything at all?
Okay, let's say, for example, that we want to save the oil fields. We want to get more oil out of the ground while we're making a transition to free energy.
Okay.
There was a academy in Moscow known as the Gubkin Moscow Academy of Oil and Gas. They built some pyramids over the oil wells, and they discovered that the viscosity, the thickness of the oil under the pyramids, decreased by 30%, which also caused an increase in production by 30% compared to all the surrounding wells.
Easier to bring up.
Yeah. And
now,
you know that
domestically we have huge oil wells in the Midwest, in Texas, in the Panhandle, in Oklahoma, that have basically stopped producing at an economic level,
yes,
because they're basically sludge.
You're saying we need big pyramids over them.
If this were tried here in the United States and had the same results as happened in the old Soviet Union, we could go domestically for a lot of what we're importing now, and we could reduce our dependence on the Mideast and all the concomitant problems that is currently engendering.
Hold it right there, gentlemen. Richard C. Hoagland and David Wilcock are my guests. We're discussing an energy, a universal energy source that we're right in the middle of. It's all around us. We're also, of course, discussing the death, the murder of Eugene Mallow, somebody who was leading the charge toward that energy. Bad news for this night. I'm Art Bell.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, you know, I'm just a talk show host. That's all I am, a talk show host. But there are some things that I see clearly because of the work I do. We're on kind of a slide toward 2012, and obviously we're in the middle of something that's happening right now. Our weather is clearly changing. Now, the energy will come from someplace, and if you listen to the intuitives, if you listen to the remote viewers, if you listen to the Hopi, doesn't matter. They're all saying roughly the same thing, and now some guys of science are beginning to say the same thing, too, so I don't know. There are some things for which you need not be a rocket scientist. And even if you're a casual listener to this show and all the people we've had on, people who can't see past certain barriers, the Hopi who come on in sort of an emergency mode, and we did a show which required a translation, and they talked of all this, ladies and gentlemen, and the year was roughly the same, just about the same from all of them. That song is pretty easy to hear. It really is. It's like a whole chorus singing the same thing. Interesting. Bob in Lincoln, Nebraska says that Richard has relied too much on science. Bob from Lincoln says, we are the ones that are broken. We are the ones that are broken, not the universe. We are the energy of everything, all that is. Now, that's a slightly, perhaps, egotistical point of view, but who knows?
Well, let me address Bob, okay? Because we didn't say the universe is broken. I said this solar system. We are one solar system in a, you know, circling a star.
It's all that will matter to us anyway.
Of 400 billion stars in the Milky Way alone.
Mm-hmm.
But we're one place where we know we're alive and conscious, and we now have astonishing evidence that something came before. That's why I was so gratified that Gene really, really, before he died, got that unmistakably that this is science, we've got the data, and he was feeling we were on the verge of a breakthrough in our area. Like he said, he thought he was on the verge of a breakthrough in his area, where he's fought so many years and so hard.
Well, if you go to where these pyramids are here on Earth, Richard, you encounter a man known as Zahiawas.
Ah, yes.
And I stood in the desert next to one of next to the Great Pyramid, actually. And Dr. Zahi said, if you think these are machines, then you are crazy as all of the other conspiratorial people on the globe and the earth right now. They're crazy. This is not a machine. I couldn't even imitate his voice. It was built by Egyptians. It's not even this and that, but it's not
Art,
a machine. It's
Art,
a joke.
The pyramids were machines. They were an astonishing legacy of a super science, a hyperdimensional science that Gene and I were discussing, that came and went and probably was left as kind of the terrestrial marker for the kind of science we have to reinvent if we're going to save ourselves as the years progress.
Do you recall, as the year 2000 came about, you two, as we were coming up to the big
Y2K.
Change? Y2K. Zahi said that there was going to be a capstone put back on the Great Pyramid.
I remember that.
That was a big deal. I talked to Zahi about that,
well,
and his eyes got bright, and he was so excited about it.
Do you know why it was a big deal?
Well, I'm thinking you'll tell me.
Esoteric symbolism.
Exactly. If you go to enterprisemission.com, and David will give a plug for his website, but if you go to Enterprise tonight, you will find a multi-chaptered saga, which we titled The End of Days. I think we've got five parts of it up there now, and we're working on a sixth. We started doing this at the 2000 crossing point because we noticed, among other things, that Zahi was very, very eager to have this high-level celebration.
He was, yes.
In the desert around the pyramids.
Yes.
On 2000. That was the same moment, by the way, when we crossed from 1999 to 2000, and you and I shared that night, remember, Art?
Of course.
Where we found that the ball on the Florida Times Square had turned into this stunning, multifaceted, spinning tetrahedral symbol.
Yep.
Which has all these little tetrahedrons spinning around. I mean, it was like the in crowd was telling us right on global television, this is how the world and the background of reality really works. So there, take it. You know, there's nothing you can do with it because we
all right,
own it.
I have more trouble with symbology, and I don't always
let me finish.
See it
let
like
me
I
finish.
Don't, you know, see the stuff. I see the
we
rocks.
We don't want rumors of a feud to start. Let me
all
finish.
Right, sure.
When I started looking at the celestial mechanics, because remember, in our model of the physics, it's all time to celestial positions within and around the solar system.
Right.
By the way, with one homage to David, the galaxy is important, but only in terms of the center of mass, the center of the galaxy, and how the solar system is slowly moving into an alignment on the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere on December 21, 2012, with the center of the Milky Way, the biggest spinning mass in our neighborhood, so to speak, only 26,000 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
It's these spinning masses that trigger the shifts and the ducting of energy, and if the system is not capable of handling it, if the energy is dissonant, if the music is off-key, think of running fingernails over a blackboard.
Try and explain to me how pyramids properly placed, and I presume operating with capstones or whatever, mm-hmm. would affect this.
Well, that's not what
otherwise
that's not
discordant.
What Zahi was trying to do.
Well,
Zahi was trying to do was
I know what
symbolic.
Zahi. I know
okay?
what Zahi was. What I'm asking
well, let me,
is,
can
though,
I finish where we were going?
Yes.
Because as we were looking at this run up to 2012 and how any of this could make sense to any rational person, I tripped over a remarkable piece of astronomical information. A key factor in the whole Egyptian mythology, cosmology, is the star Sirius, right?
Mm-hmm.
She stands for Isis,
yes,
the goddess of fertility and the mother of mankind and all that.
Yes.
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. If you imagine that we have lines going from the North Pole to the South Pole, going across the equator,
mm-hmm.
like the line at Greenwich where the day begins, that's the modern equivalent of the ancient line that went from the pole down through the Great Pyramid and down to the South Pole. That used to be the meridian of the Earth.
Right.
So what I did was, in the computer, I set up a calculation, and I looked out as if I was standing in the King's Chamber, and the pyramid was transparent. I was looking toward the south at midnight on that magic night when Zahi wanted to do his big ceremony. And by the way, invite about half of the bigwigs from all over the planet, including George Bush Sr., and the Prince of Wales and God knows who else to be with him in that desert ceremony. You knew that was part of the plan, right?
I knew it was magnificent.
The biggest party ever thrown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was the wrong date. The millennium, as we know, was 2000 to 2001, not 1999 to 2000. And no wiggling the figures can make a fact wrong or right. The numbers are the numbers. So I kept asking myself, why do they want to have this huge planetary party on the wrong night, a year ahead of when it should be taken care of? It turned out very simply that that was the night for the only time, get this, David, in galactic history when Sirius crossed the meridian, the ancient Giza meridian, precisely at midnight.
Uh-huh.
From then on, it is to the east of the meridian,
okay.
And it was to the west before. So that was like a dividing line.
I know. This has
now,
great meaning for you, Richard.
Wait. We're not getting to the good stuff yet. If you look at that line, where it is in the sky, you extend that line like a celestial meridian out into space, so it goes through, you know, where Sirius is in the sky. If you track 12 degrees to the east, 1 degree per year, which is how Sirius will move in relation to the Earth and relation to the galactic center, when that alignment occurs at midnight in 2012, that will be the winter solstice, and D-Day will have arrived. In other words, that ceremony marked the beginning of a 12-year clock,
right.
The final countdown to something happening in 2012 by these guys, led by Zahi, who know something that they are not wanting the rest of us to figure out.
All right. I'm going to try to ask again. What I want to know, Richard, is... you both have indicated that these pyramids have the potential to save the planet from what otherwise is going to occur, to use this energy.
Okay, what's the most massive catastrophe you can imagine on Earth? Bigger than
an unaltered, continued course that we're on right now.
Okay, I'm not talking human-generated. I'm not talking social devolution or people fighting over resources. Or
well, I'm not sure it's not all mixed up together.
Big natural catastrophe. What's the biggest natural catastrophe you can imagine for this planet?
I can imagine a lot of them, Richard.
The biggest one. Come on, the biggest one.
I'll
say it, pole shift.
Exactly.
Okay, fine.
If the pole flips over, we are 78% area water. You get what's called the slosh effect, and oceans slosh over the continents at 1,000 miles per hour, scouring everything down to bedrock. The atmosphere whistles across the plains at 1,000 miles an hour, scouring everything down to bedrock. There's almost nothing left if the planet physically flips over in space. I'm not talking a magnetic shift.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking a physical flip from one obliquity orientation dramatically in a heartbeat to another obliquity orientation.
Okay, and again, my question is, how do we prevent this catastrophic event from occurring? What is it that pyramids do, and how do they do it?
Okay.
What do we know about that?
Well, here's where we get interesting. What we believe the pyramids were trying to do, built by the prior civilization, and when I say we, I mean me and Hancock and Bivol. I don't know what David and I ever talked about this. I don't know whether David is even in the same...
Yeah, we're on the same page.
We're on the same page. Okay, I might have imagined, given we're coming at this from two different directions, but we're parallel here. What the pyramids were trying to do, Art, was stave off, through resonance vibrations connecting to hyperspace, the catastrophic interference pattern that results in the Earth literally flipping over, seeking what's called a new degree of freedom. Think of the model of the atom, all right, where you have electrons orbiting around protons and hydrogen.
Yes.
And every once in a while, you'll have a little electron go flip. It does that because it cannot handle the energy coming into it in its current state. It must change its orientation to an anti-parallel spin so that it equalizes out the waves, so that the music is harmonious as opposed to discordant. It really is kind of like celestial music. What seems to happen is in the broken condition of the solar system, the broken condition of the Earth, when the energy mounting in the background, which is what all this planetary data that we have now, we're going to put on the Enterprise website in a three-part series beginning the next couple of days. We got part one up there tonight. You can go to enterprisemission.com and read it. It's right at the top of the page. We'll have the two parts showing all the data, all the sources, all the institutions, all the evidence that something big is building all over the solar system. When that building crescendo hits, the Earth can't take it. It must do something physically to reorient itself to the frequencies and the vibration of the energy, because it's a massive overload. It's like a huge short circuit. So what it does is it reorients its physical spin axis. It also changes the rate of the day length, and it may even change the orbit a little bit. But the primary effect is it reorients the spin axis where most of the energy is stored, and then it comes to equilibrium again for the next 12,000-plus years. We do not want that to happen. That is bad for beagles and begonias, as Carl Sagan used to say. It wipes out almost everybody when this hits the fan. So what do the ancients try to do? They tried to build, in essence, a modulator, an energized modulator, which is the Great Pyramid, connected, made of limestone, 6 million tons of limestone, connected to God knows how many gigatons of limestone in a band of 70 million year limestone stretching from Giza all the way to Indonesia in the crust of the Earth, ancient coral reefs.
All right.
This material, the limestone, is an operative, active, hyper-dimensional medium.
Okay, right, got it.
It's
okay,
the key medium.
Richard, then the people who did it on Mars and the people who did it on Earth,
yep,
both were unsuccessful.
That's right.
So,
well, maybe and maybe not. What if most of these pyramids were built after something had already happened? And by building them, they actually stabilized things and got it back to working order a lot faster than otherwise would have happened.
That's a viable idea.
Possibility,
very
I suppose.
Very viable idea.
Yeah.
Now,
but see, they learned about it too late, whereas we know about it now.
Or they were prevented by all the nonsense and chicanery that's going on now, and where you keep killing people off to try to introduce the way physics really works. Remember, 100 years ago, if we were having this conversation tonight, Art, we wouldn't be having the same conversation. We would be surrounded by this technology, this physics, this knowledge, and it would be ample time to do major, huge, important things to even out the music so the planet does not flip.
Yeah, let me kick in one thing here. Bush just asked for $24 billion for us to continue fighting this war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Our rough guesstimate calculations are that for $150 million, which is only a percentage of $1 billion, that we could build a worldwide network of these pyramids that would increase the production of these oil wells. They would purify water for people who don't have sanitation right now. They would do things such as reducing the overall amount of earthquake activity.
David, can you prove it on scale?
Sure.
The Russians already demonstrated it.
The Russians have done it. I mean, you got
to
understand.
Go to David's website. I'm sure there's a link there. You can read the papers yourself in the mainstream Soviet literature. They did it. They've been doing a lot of things that the West doesn't know about.
I know.
Yeah,
I know that. I know that's true. And you're saying the Russians built pyramids over oil wells.
Over old defunct oil wells.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And increased their production by 20 to 30%.
30%?
Through thinning the viscosity, right?
Yeah.
So that the production increased and they got that much more out.
Yeah, one of the side effects is it changes molecular viscosities. There's umpteen experiments in labs all over the world. I mean, if we were to go and do the same thing for physics and chemistry that we're trying to do for planetary science in this three-part paper, we'd have the work for the next decade cut out for us. It's just, Art, that no one has assembled this data into a coherent, different paradigm picture
right.
of really what's going on.
You guys remember
stuck with some very old ideas, and my question, and this is going to sound almost treasonous, is are we stuck with this through ignorance or because somebody wants a lot of people to die?
Well, it's worth thinking about. I wanted to point out one thing.
Do you remember years ago a book came out called Alternative 3?
Yes.
And initially I dismissed it as pure bunk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you did too. The closer we get to this date, and the more I learn, and the more I see going on, and the more the physics comes together, and the predictive data, you know, the dots all match up, I'm wondering now if that was not kind of the prescription for what a few in the know are planning to do while the rest of us, you know, basically, you know, kiss our you-know-what goodbye?
Well, I had somebody from Black Ops tell me that the so-called astronaut named Grodin was actually an anagram for Gordon. And we're not talking the guy whose first name is Gordon. We're talking an astronaut whose last name was Gordon. That a lot of that stuff actually was true. What the Alternative 3 said way back in the 70s was that the whole solar system was going to be heating up.
Yep.
And that Mars would become a more viable place to live as a result.
All right, gentlemen, hold on. This is Alternative 3 for me. I've got to break. We've got the news coming up. Certainly talking of cosmic things this morning, aren't we? What do you feel about it? As you listen to all these different people of all these different... what's the right word? All these different persuasions, remote viewers, the whole bead, intuitives, people like Richard C. Hoagland and David. We'll be right back.